This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Craig Norris, and I want to invite you to check out the R330. It's kind of like Quirks and Quarks, except I don't talk about space or science or anything like that. Instead, I play the week's best Canadian indie music. Head over to cbcradio3.com for all of the info.
Was in the moon of wintertime when all the birds had fled. That is the Huron Carol, or the 1926 English translation. The original was written in the Huron Wendat language, and it was written in 1643, not far from here, by the Jesuit father Jean de Brébeuf. And still, at this time of year, you can hear it sung in French and English and the original Huron, in churches and theaters, and just about wherever people gather to sing, here in the moon of wintertime.
Jesus, your King is born. Jesus is born in excelsis gloria.
This is the time of year we gather to turn to tradition, to the traditions of Hanukkah, to the Celtic tradition of the Yule log that burns to keep the darkness at bay, to the traditions of the Druid priests who cut the holy mistletoe, to the traditions of the Roman feasts of Saturnalia. The traditions of Christmas go way back, back into the big numbers, and they encompass and contain the Christian story of the Nativity, and more.
Jesus, your King is born. Jesus is born in excelsis gloria.
This song embodies in music the coming together of the European and First Nations cultures, the grand coming together that set the stage for who we are today. The circle of inclusion has widened. Now it contains the coming together of the many who make us what we are. Struggling as they were struggling when Brébeuf wrote this song to understand one another, but coming together nevertheless, as we traditionally come together even in this room every year at this time, to do exactly what Brébeuf did 400 years ago, to tell stories and sing songs. This song connects us to those who were here before us.
O children of the forest, free, O sons of Manitou, the holy child above and heaven is born today.
Hello, I'm Stuart McLean, and this is the Vinyl Cafe Christmas Concert. Well, this is the time of tradition, and I'm in favor of that. I want to thank you for coming, and that Thank you for that warm welcome. I know many of you make this a tradition of your own every Christmas. And in the traditional spirit of this season, we have an hour of songs and stories for you, and we're going to get down to it right now. Our first guest is a six-time Juno Award winner. He's the bass player and lead singer of Canada's primo roots country group, Prairie Oyster. Six Junos and too many Canadian Country Music Awards to count, including Band of the Year, Entertainer of the Year, Record of the Year. He has won awards for his singing, his songwriting, and his playing. And now, after 30 years in the business, he's about to launch a solo career. He's not leaving Prairie Oyster, but he's going off by himself for a while. It's something he began in an understated, modest way by opening for Merle Haggard at the Saddle Dome a little while ago. Ladies and gentlemen, Russell DeCarl.
Thank you, Stuart. Thank you very much. I'm going to do a Christmas song for you. This was a big hit when I was a kid for a fellow by the name of Bobby Helms. And, boy, since then, this song has gone on to sell over 100 million copies and been recorded by people like Brenda Lee and the Arcade Fire. It's our version of it.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells swinging, jingle bells ring. Snowing and blowing up bushels of fun. Now the jingle hop has begun. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells chime in jingle bell time. Dancing and prancing in Jingle Bell Square. In the frosty air. What a bright time, it's the right time to rock the night away. Jingle bell time is a swell time to go gliding in a one-horse sleigh. Giddy up, jingle horse, pick up your feet. Jingle around the clock. Mix and mingle in the jingling feet. That's the jingle bell rock. It's the right time to rock the night away. Jingle bell time is a swell time to go gliding in a one-horse sleigh. Giddy up, jingle horse, pick up your feet. Jingle around the clock. Mix and mingle in the jingling feet. That's the jingle bell, that's the jingle bell, that's the jingle bell rock.
Russell DeCarl. If you listen to the show on the radio, you'll know that one of the things we try and do on the Vinyl Cafe is shine the light on young Canadian musicians, on people who we think deserve a bit of attention, people who might not otherwise have the light shone upon them. Well, I first saw our next musical act about 5 years ago. It was a glorious autumn afternoon, and I was biking home from the CBC in Toronto. I was biking along Queen Street, and they were busking at the corner of Queen and John, and they were singing so sweetly, I just had to stop and listen, and I did. I listened for a couple of songs, and we chatted a little bit. I threw some money in their guitar case, and then I took off. Since that afternoon, 5 years ago, they have recorded three CDs, and they have toured across the country from coast to coast. And I've just been waiting patiently for the day that I could come to London and say, ladies and gentlemen, would you please welcome Dalla.
Thank you. I'm Sheila.
And I'm Amanda.
And just a footnote to that story. It's a true story. We did meet on the corner of Queen and John. And about 10 minutes after Stuart rode away, Amanda and I were still playing to nobody. And he came back, actually, and he reached into our guitar case and took some change for gum. That's what he said, anyways.
You know, I always thought what happened on Queen Street stayed on Queen Street.
Well, we're going to play your song off our album that we wrote about a friend of ours who fell in love with a hockey player.
And she kind of had her heart broken when he got a scholarship to an American university. So we figured that this was the great Canadian tragedy. And so this is a song for anybody here who's had their heart broken by love or by hockey. And this is called Hockey Sweater.
Sweater, and you.
was Dalla, and they'll be back later, but I'm back now. Too little, too late. That's a good thing I'm back. It's time now for the Vinyl Cafe Story Exchange. Well, you know how this works. This is the part of the show where you send us your stories. They have to be true stories and they have to be short stories, but after that, they don't have to be anything at all. It's up to you. We promise we'll read everything you send us, and we'll read some of our favorites on the radio. We have one today from Rolly Hasselton of North Saanich, British Columbia. Dear Stuart, writes Rolly, when I was a young boy, we lived in a small house on the outskirts of the city. My parents rented the house from our elderly landlady, Mrs. Bennett. Mrs. Bennett lived alone in a small apartment downtown. Eventually, my family moved to another house, but my parents kept in touch with Mrs. Bennett. One Christmas, a few years after we moved, I was sitting at the dining room table with my family and friends enjoying Christmas dinner. We were all talking and laughing and carrying on as families do at Christmas, but my father looked distracted. I could tell he had something on his mind. "What's wrong, Dad?" I asked. He told me he was thinking about Mrs. Bennett. "She's well into her 90s now," he told me. "We invited her to Christmas dinner, but she said she finds it hard to get out. It makes me sad to think of her being all alone." Now, I just got my driver's license, and I was always looking for an excuse to drive. So I suggested to my father that I could drive downtown and take Mrs. Bennett a plate of food. My father thought that would be a great idea. So after dinner, Mom made up a plate of turkey with roast potatoes, Brussels sprouts, dressing, and gravy. She put Christmas pudding in a bowl and smothered brandy butter on top of it. She covered everything with foil, and I headed downtown. The streets were deserted as I pulled up in front of Mrs. Bennett's building. Her apartment was in an old four-story brick building in the seedy part of town. Snowflakes were starting to fall as I walked up the steps into the lobby. What a grand building this must have been when it was built, I thought. I rode the old cage elevator up to her floor and knocked on her door. "Who is it?" she asked, cracking the door and peering out into the dimly lit hall. "Hi, Mrs. Bennett, it's Rolly," I said. "Mom put together a dinner for you." Mrs. Bennett opened the door and smiled. "Come in," she said. "How nice of you to do this. It smells so good." She unwrapped the plate and set it on the table. She lit a couple of candles and told me to sit with her. "Oh, I should be going," I said, and looking for an excuse to leave, I pointed outside. "It's starting to snow." "Please stay until I finish." So I sat down at the table and she poured herself a glass of brandy. I looked around at the emptiness of her place. I'd just come from a house full of Christmas carols and warmth, a tree with lights and waist deep in presents. Suddenly, I felt guilty about my motive for coming. "This is delicious," she said. "I haven't seen anyone in a couple of days. Everyone I know is gone now. You have made this Christmas special. Thank you." Mrs. Bennett started telling me stories from her life. I knew at that point I was going to be there for a long time. She told me about the building of the railway and stories of the Wild West. She talked for hours about the old days, about saloons and outlaws and a time that I only knew from the movies. It was well after midnight when I left. I walked into the cold, snowy night, and I started my dad's car. I looked up at her apartment as I pulled onto the road, and Mrs. Bennett was at her window waving. I waved, too, as I drove off into the night, knowing as I left that I would never, ever let anyone I know spend Christmas alone. Story came to us from Roly Hasselden of North Saanich, British Columbia. Russell DeCarl is going to come out and sing a song for us now. And Russell, why don't you introduce him?
Thanks very much. This song could have been inspired by that story. It was a feeling like that inspired it. I wrote this a few years ago, and as happy as Christmas is, I know for a lot of us, it's a whole other reality for a lot of other people. And that's what this is about.
Something's in the air, people rushing everywhere. There's no mistaking Christmas time again. Fearless leaders on the TV, scrubbed until they shine, will tell us what a bang-up year it's been. Well, it's a wonderful life for those who have plenty, with loved ones gathered near. But I can't help but feel for the ones who haven't any. It's the loneliest day of the year. Oh, Saint Nicholas, he may be jolly, I can't help feeling melancholy, and I've got the blues for Christmas. Carolers sing and jingle bells ring, it's a holiday parade of shuffling feet. But when the lights go down on this tinsel town, the unfortunate take back the street. Well, it's a wonderful life for those who have plenty, loved ones gathered near. But my heart reaches out for the ones who haven't any, on the loneliest day of the year. Oh, the halls are decked with boughs of holly, still I feel so melancholy, and I've got the blues for Christmas. Decked with boughs of holly, still I feel so melancholy, I've got the blues for Christmas. St. Nicholas, he may be jolly, I can't help feeling melancholy, and I've got the blues for Christmas.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Russell DeCarl. It was Dave's idea to take Sam with him to Cape Breton. Just a long weekend, just to visit his mom and her new husband, Smith. To give Morley a break. They left on a Thursday night. They had a two-hour layover in Halifax. For supper, they bought sandwiches in the airport, and they watched a group of carolers as they ate. Dave said, "It's a nice place to be." Sam frowned. Dave waved his hand in the air. "An airport," he said, "at Christmas time. It's a nice place to be." He was watching a little girl running away from her father, squealing. Sam said, "You should give Mom an iPhone for Christmas. Mom's phone sucks." Sam had a notebook open on the table in front of him. The word "Mom" was written at the top of the page. Underneath, there was a long list of items. Each item was crossed off. It was coming on Christmas, and for the first time in his life, Sam was as obsessed with the gifts he was going to give as he was with the ones he was going to get. Oh, he had written up a list for himself, written it and revised it and presented it. But this year, what Sam was really taken up with was the impulse to splurge on his family. No macaroni-decorated pencil holders for Sam this year. Sam wanted to buy stuff, good stuff. He'd already bought a scarf and a Coldplay CD for his sister, a book and a turkey baster for his father. But he was having trouble with his mom. He wanted to get her a new laptop or a food dehydrator or a deep fryer or an ice cream maker or a massage chair, but everything was far too expensive. Sam put his sandwich down and picked up his pen. He wrote "new toaster" at the bottom of the list. And then he frowned, shook his head, and he scratched it out. Smith said he'd pick them up at the airport. Dave said, "Don't be crazy, Smith. We'll rent a car." So off they set, into the cold Cape Breton night, along the 125 and then onto the 223, through Barrochois and Beaver Cove, through Big Beach and Christmas Island. Big inflatable Santas swaying in the wind. LED icicles hanging from all the eaves. "Everyone has lights up here," said Sam. "Well, it's darker around here," said Dave. It was a perfect weekend. On Saturday morning, Dave took Sam and his cousin Margot over to Macaulay's woodlot to get a Christmas tree. They hiked up the long sloping trail through the maple bush, their breath puffy and white. It was just like when Dave was a kid and he went there with his father. That night after supper, the guitars came out. Dave's sister Annie had her fiddle, everyone playing and singing along, everyone except Sam. Sam was sitting in the corner writing in his notebook. They left on Sunday afternoon, the sky gray and heavy with snow. They were about 40 minutes coming through the highlands, twisting and turning through the forests and the farms. After a half hour, Sam said, "I can't seem to find a suitable present for Mom." Dave said, "She really liked the pencil holder you made her last year. Maybe you could make her something." Sam said, I want to buy her something." "Ah," said Dave as they drove out of the hills, "it's hard to shop for Mom." "Yes," said Sam. "She loves everything you give her." "Exactly," said Sam. "And you want to give her the perfect thing." "Exactly." "That's hard," said Dave. "And expensive," said Sam. There may be no better place in the world for a father and a son to have a heart-to-heart conversation than in a car moving through the night. First off, they don't have to look at one another. Second, and most importantly, they both know that if things get awkward, the ride will eventually come to an end, and with it, the awkwardness too. Dave reached out and turned down the radio. "Did I ever tell you about the Christmas I met your mom?" Sam kept staring at the road. Sam said, "In the States, right?" Dave said, "That's right. I was working in the States, traveling with a show. You met her at a skating rink in Memphis," said Sam. Close, said Dave. Providence, Rhode Island. Dave smiled in the darkness of the car, in the glow of the dashboard. They both sat quietly for a moment. Dave lost in the glow of memory. Then Sam said, you ran into her on the skating rink and you had to take her to the hospital for stitches. Well, said Dave, yeah, that's right. I think I made a pretty big impression. What happened, said Sam. Well, said Dave, I'm trying to tell you. Dave and Morley corresponded for 6 years. Letters and some phone calls back and forth, but they hadn't managed another collision since that fateful night in that skating rink in Providence. The year I'm telling you about, the Christmas Dave is telling Sam about, they had arranged to get together on Boxing Day. Dave hadn't told anyone in his family about Morley. He didn't want to jinx anything, but he thought about her obsessively. And now, about to see her after 6 long years, what he thought about mostly was that he had to win her love. And one of the ways he thought he could do that was by getting her the perfect Christmas present. Dave didn't have the foggiest idea what that present could be. What he thought was that he would find something for her when he got home to Big Narrows for Christmas. It was only when he got home that he realized the foolishness of that. He wandered up and down River Street on the day before Christmas in growing desperation. There was a limited number of choices in town. Frenchie's used clothing. Angus MacDonnell's post office and general store. Rutledge's hardware. And Arnie Gallagher's florist travel agency gift and tackle shop. By mid-afternoon, Dave was buying things out of sheer desperation. A fruitcake from Kerrigan's, a crocheted toilet paper cover at the church bazaar, and a fishing lure and a box of frozen minnows from Arnie's. He stumbled home on Christmas Eve in a state of despair. There'd be no shopping on Christmas Day, and he was leaving the morning after. Morley was meeting him at the airport. He couldn't show up empty-handed. Why not, said Sam. What, said Dave? Why couldn't you show up empty-handed? Well, because he had already told Morley he'd got her a present, hadn't he? And she had gone and got one for him. They had talked about it on the phone. She seemed quite excited about the idea. Dave decided his only hope was that his sister or his mother would get something on Christmas morning that he could borrow. His mother got oven mitts and a crocheted toilet paper cover. His sister got a box of frozen minnows. It was only when everyone was getting ready for bed that the solution dawned on Dave. He would leave early. He would stop in Sydney on the way to the airport. He would get something at the Sydney Boxing Day sale. That was a good idea, said Sam. Ah, said Dave, genius should never be confused with desperation. They were still in the car. They were pulling into Sydney themselves. Dave turned onto George Street and drove downtown. When he got there, he pulled over in front of a little store on Charlotte. Sam said, why are we stopping? Dave said, I'm going to tell you. When Dave had pulled into Sydney on that desperate Boxing Day that I'm telling you about, there were exactly 3 cars parked on the street where he had stopped. One was his. The other 2 had 6 inches of snow covering them bumper to bumper. There wasn't a soul to be seen and not a fat chance of any Boxing Day bonanza. Dave had expected hustle and bustle. He'd been away too long. Sydney was shut up tight. He had 3 hours before his plane left, so he took a long, slow drive around town. He was looking for any store that might be open, dreading what he might find. The world's largest Toblerone just wasn't going to cut it. And then, when he had given up all hope, while he was waiting at a red light right on the edge of town when he was heading to the airport, he glanced into his rearview mirror and saw a woman step up onto the sidewalk and move out of the falling snow, under a large storefront awning, and disappear through a door into a store, an open store. How could he have missed it? Dave did a U-turn. He wheeled over to the curb and he parked. I say parked. He only parked in a manner of speaking. He fishtailed over to the curb and he jumped out as the car was coming to a stop. As I said, it had started to snow. Dave stood there for a moment looking around, and then he followed the lone set of footsteps across the street onto the sidewalk and up to the door. The lights were on, spilling out the store window onto the snowy sidewalk. And there were people inside. Dave pressed his face to the window. There was a man and a woman in there. He grabbed the door handle and pulled it. It was locked. Now, the ability to knock at a locked store door after hours and convince who's ever in there to throw the door open is an underappreciated art. Dave pulled out all the stops, knocking and smiling and nodding and benign encouragement. But in the end, it was honesty that won the day. "I'm in a jam," said Dave, smiling and nodding. The woman cracked the door open just enough so he could talk to her. I'm picking up my girlfriend to take her to her parents for Christmas, and I haven't," he hesitated for a moment, and then he let it all out in a rush, "I haven't bought her a present." The man, who was standing behind the woman, walked over to the door and said, "We're only in here to tidy the shelves. We're getting ready for tomorrow. We aren't supposed to sell things. It's against the law, actually. We could get in trouble." The lady turned and looked at the man and then at Dave. Dave said, I know I shouldn't have left it this long. I just thought I could get something at the Boxing Day sales. Today, he put it out there. And when he did, goodness demonstrated one more time that it is often just looking for an opportunity to reveal itself. "How can we help you?" said the woman, stepping back from the door so he could come in. The display beside him was piled high with heavy woolen sweaters. Coats hung on the wall to his right, and there was a jewelry case by the cash register. Dave headed right for the jewelry case. He cast his eyes over silver rings and strands of pearls and brooches of various shapes. And then he saw it, glittering and sparkling on a stretch of black velvet, the most beautiful bracelet he had ever seen, a delicate band, a gold link studded with tiny diamonds. "That one," said Dave. "It's perfect." The lady glanced at Dave's soggy running shoes, his frayed bell-bottom jeans. "The tennis bracelet," she said. Now, Dave had never bought jewelry before in his life. He didn't know anything about jewelry. He looked at the lady. "It's perfect, right?" He already had his wallet out. He was counting his money, but she didn't take it. Instead, she picked up the bracelet and held it in the light. "It is a pretty bracelet," she said. "Does she wear a lot of jewelry?" "Well," said Dave, "not that I remember." "Play tennis?" Dave sighed. If Dave had walked into that store today and walked right over to that jewelry case by the cash register and picked that bracelet up, the woman, whose name is Alice, would have been delighted to sell it to him, as she has been delighted to sell bracelets and brooches to countless men over the years. But the Dave who was standing in front of her on that Boxing Day evening all those years ago was not the man who would stand in front of her today. That was 27-year-old Dave clutching that bracelet. And Alice, he looked every month his age, young, lost, confused, bewildered, and not a little desperate. "Leonard," said Alice to her husband, "don't just stand there staring. Pour this young man a mug of tea." Alice plunked the mug of tea onto a table, which she would later pile with scarves. "So," she said, "tell me about the girl." And Alice and Leonard drank their tea, while Dave told them all about Morley and his hopes and his dreams for her. The things you can tell perfect strangers that you can't tell your family. Almost an hour passed. The snow fell gently outside. Alice got up and started walking toward the cache, and then she turned and came back. "You know," she said, and she looked over at her husband, who had a box open on the floor and was filling a display with women's socks. "You know," she said, "one year Leonard gave me a pair of pinking shears for Christmas. Best present ever." When Dave left the store a half hour later, he was carrying a little bag. There was a pair of soft suede gloves in the bag. The last thing the woman said to him was, "I think she'll love the gloves. I think they're perfect." Dave was smiling. "Me too," he said. It was dark outside. The snow had already covered over the footprints he had made on his way in. "I can still remember exactly what it looked like," said Dave, "sitting there in my rented car and looking along the street." He pointed at the awning on the store that he and Sam were parked in front of. "Come on," he said. And he and Sam got out of the car and walked up to the window. The store was closed. Dave said, "Remember I came down here a few years ago to help Grandma in the fall? On the way home, I dropped in. Alice was still here, but the husband had died. She remembered me, though. She made me tea. I told her all about you and your sister." 2 days later, back at home, just a few days before Christmas, Dave went into Sam's room. Sam was in bed. He was reading. Dave was holding a large shopping bag. "This is for you," he said, "to give your mother. There's wrapping paper downstairs. You should wrap it yourself and make a card." Sam said, "It's okay. I got her something myself." Christmas morning at Dave's house followed its normal routine. They got up early, and Sam and Stephanie came into Dave and Morley's bedroom, and they opened their stockings. And after that, they had breakfast. And after breakfast, everyone still in their pajamas went into the living room and open presents. Somewhere in the middle of the mess of the morning, Sam presented his mother with her gift. "This is for you," he said. A small rectangle wrapped in red paper with green ribbon that looked like it had been tied by a tiny rodent. It was a photograph in a black frame. A picture of Dave taken from behind. He was peering into a store window under a big awning. "It's lovely," said Morley, and she passed it to Dave. Dave stared at the photo and then at his son. "How did you get that?" he said. Sam smiled shyly. "With your phone," he said. "I took it with your phone when you weren't looking." Dave said, "I didn't know I had a camera in my phone." Sam said, "Do you like it?" Morley passed the picture to Stephanie. It was Stephanie who said, "I don't get it." Morley looked at her son and then at her husband. Dave seemed to be tearing up. Morley said, "I don't think I get it either." And they all sat there while Dave told the story all over again. "Everything I've told you so far, plus one more small bit. When I told Alice about Mom," Dave said, "I told her that that night Mom and I met at the rink, she didn't have gloves on." He looked at Morley. "Do you remember this?" In the car on the way to the hospital, I asked you if your hands were cold. Then he turned to Sam and Stephanie. She said yes, they were cold, but that she rarely wore gloves. She said she felt bad buying new ones because she lost them all the time. And I thought just because she loses gloves doesn't mean she doesn't deserve new ones now and then. Morley had never heard the story of how Dave had bought those gloves before. When Dave was finished, she looked down at her tea and smiled, and then, without a word, she disappeared upstairs. She reappeared a few minutes later. She was holding a lump of stiff brown suede in her hands. The gloves are old now, the fingertips almost completely worn through. There are small tears in the palm. Morley held them up proudly. "The only pair of gloves I never lost," she said. Then she put the gloves on the mantelpiece beside the picture of Dave peering into the store window. And that is the story of Dave and Morley's first Christmas. There have been many since. Dave hasn't always been that successful with his gifts. But there have been lots of memorable Christmases. The year he decorated the pear tree in the backyard. The year he assembled the snowmaking machine. The Christmas at Polly Anderson's when he spiked the kid's punch by mistake. The year his tongue froze to the TV antenna. The year he cooked the turkey. And that very first gift, the gloves, when Dave managed to tell Morley how he really felt about her and to tell her everything she needed to know about him. Sam has given his mother many wonderful things over the years. This was his first grown-up present. It'll be hard to top, because he didn't only give her the picture or the frame he bought to put it in. He also gave her the story that went with it. It's a story of a coming together, a looking back for sure, but most importantly, a looking forward to all the stories that are yet to come. Thank you very much. Thank you. Well, sadly, we have come to that part of the show where it's time for us to say farewell. Before we do that, I want to thank everyone who was on stage with me tonight. Chris Whiteley. Dennis Pendreth. John Shear. Dalla. Russell DeCarl. Okay, we got time to sing one more song before we go. We'd love to hear you singing along. If you know the words, please join in. If you don't know the words, you can hum along with us. And if you're too shy to do that, you can just think along. Johnny, here we go. Dalla.
Sleigh bells ring, I listen. In the lane, snow.
Russell DeCarl.
Gone away is the bluebird. Here to stay is a new bird. He sings a love song as we stroll along, walking in a winter wonderland.
Stuart.
In the meadow we will build a snowman, then pretend that he is Parson Brown. He'll say, are you married? We'll say, no, man. But you can do the job when you're in town.
There on we'll conspire as we dream by the fire to face unafraid the plans that we made walking in a winter wonderland.
Okay, hold on here. Hold on. I got a few more people I want to thank before we go. Thanks to Frank Finastori, Bill Herault, and Brad Scrutton for the technical assistance. David Amers, the founding producer of the Vinyl Cafe. Ron Skinner is the recording engineer. Louise Curtis is the production assistant. Julie Penner is the music producer. And Meg Masters is the long-suffering story editor. The Vinyl Cafe is produced by Jess Milton. I'm Stuart McLean, and this is your last chance to sing along.
Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the lane, snow is glistening. A beautiful sight, we're happy tonight. Walking in a winter wonderland.
Last chance.
Walking in a winter wonderland.
Thanks for coming.
Hello, you've been listening to a brand new Vinyl Cafe concert. Stuart McLean and special musical guests Megan Smith and Matt Anderson will be heading out on tour in February. They'll be visiting Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, Prince Edward Island, and Maine, doing live Vinyl Cafe concerts in places like Charlottetown, Miramichi, Fredericton, St. John, Moncton, Port Hawkesbury, Glace Bay, Truro, Wolfville, Halifax, Orno, and Portland, Maine. At the beginning of February, the Vinyl Cafe will be recording two radio shows in Minnedosa, Manitoba. You can check the website for all the details. That's vinylcafe.com.
I hope we'll see you next year. Now go home to your families.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.